Okay, thank you. Ryan, did you want me to do the question again?
Sure, if you would.
Okay. Education. If we are to raise out of a grant-driven economy, how mm-hmm. best can we influence our education systems?
Yeah, I mean, it really, it's self-governance, it's self-determination, it's identifying the educational needs of our community. Councilman Risling talks about vocational training and those types of things, which is important, and I've promoted that. And the budget he's talking about was put forward by myself, which identified closer to $900,000 in grants and scholarships for our tribal members in order to pursue higher education. So that's important to me. You know, I've always been a real supporter of the education program. I wasn't particularly pleased with the former manager, former director, as I think I've made pretty clear. I don't think that the focus was where it should be, which was on the tribal member and the growth of the tribal member through our educational system. I mean, we've seen a number of times where, you know, individuals, and I'm not going to put the entire blame on the school district. I mean, we have, you know, tribal members who are part of the school board that have, you know, been there for a time, and the issues are still present. But at the same time, you know, we're continuously not producing the results that we feel should be produced. Now, what my focus is, and what I've impressed upon the new manager, is that we need to develop a tribal school system that better meets the needs of the tribal students that we have here on the reservation. And that starts from, well, we already have the Early Head Start. We have the Head Start program. What we're hoping to do is work on, you know, a K-3, something that we can, you know, start small and build upon. I've asked that the Tribal Council approve, you know, application for a HUD block grant that the education program will be going after. You talk about, you know, grant-driven economy. That's an important grant program that is out there that we've relied on for years to be able to help provide, you know, important infrastructure here on the reservation for those types of services. So that's where I think the focus should be, is really trying to not only put pressure on the school board and the district to provide a better education, a higher quality education for our children, but also on our own end as a self-governance tribe and a tribe that has used self-determination over the years to our benefits, is to identify and work on a strategy for education for our people that meets our needs, that really gets to the root of being able to learn. And if it's a trade, we should be able to understand that rather quickly, that an individual is maybe more skilled in doing those types of activities as opposed to maybe a career in the science field or you know, in other fields of that nature. But look and see where it is that individuals need to go, but also have a real emphasis on the tribal culture, have an emphasis on the traditions, you know, language be a big part of that. But I think one thing that honestly that I think is missing in our education program, and I've had a number of discussions with education director and others, is really highlighting the progress that the tribe has made and actually teaching our own history from our own viewpoint, and really illustrating, if it's the fish and water issues, for instance, you know, go through from 1856, when the war started, 1864, you know, the treaty was signed, 1876, the executive order, you know, 1909, the dam up there in Iron Gate Dam was built. You know, you get into 1955, the Trinity River Division was created, which dammed the river, 1962, you know, the amendment which created the San Luis Unit. I mean, these are important things that have happened in the history of the tribe that aren't taught in the school. That rarely is there a discussion, certainly when I was there, the discussion around tribal leaders over the years, you know, Peter Maston, you know, a lot of the Hostler men, certainly Moon, you know, there are a lot of folks that have played an important role. And I don't mean to be disrespectful to Lieben, but there have been a tremendous amount of folks who have come before us who have helped to put us in a really good position. And, you know, the fights through Jesse Short and the Hoopoe Rock Settlement Act and the Indian Self-Determination Education Assistance Act, and when all of those things were signed, you know, the first tribe, one of first tribes to actually enter into a compact with the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the federal government, you know, first tribe to compact Indian Health Service, the first tribe to get into an agreement with the Bureau of Reclamation. You know, we're the first tribe to do a lot of these things. And I think it's important that we continue to instill the successes and the history of the tribe from our viewpoint, so as folks who hear as they grow can better understand and go out there and advocate on our behalf and really make a difference for the tribe. So yeah, I believe education is vital, and again, for a number of years we've done what we've done, and I'm interested in moving a new direction, and the council is as well, and that's where we're headed.
Very good. Thank you, Ryan. I'm talking with Ryan Jackson, chairman of the Hoopa Valley Tribe, and Gary Risling, who is a candidate for the tribal chairman seat on the election day of March the 21st. Yep, 21st. And we're here in Studio 91, and we were asking a series of questions here, and Ryan's going to pick up this next question here first.
Okay.
And this is about social justice / community values. What are your thoughts on the quality of social justice in Hoopa? What is the base observation for your opinion?
Okay, you talk about social justice, and maybe can you allude to what exactly are you referencing as far as social justice?
Well, looking at how people are seen, how people are treated, the quality of life that people have.
Is it by the tribal government or by what folks outside of that?
Well, the tribal government would have a great influence on the quality of life and social justice within the community.
Sure, absolutely. I think one example that is law enforcement, for instance, and the reasons why the tribal council over the years had decided, hey, we're going to have our own tribal security program. We're going to develop the MOUs in order for our people to be certainly treated better when it comes to their interactions with law enforcement, for instance. And I think we've done a good job of developing that program. Certainly, if you're talking about, you know, services that are provided by the county or other folks, certainly they're lacking. I'm not going to suggest that folks have come in and really done as good a job as possible. I mean, what we've talked about is providing opportunities for folks who are in need of an opportunity, for instance, and understanding, you know, the situations that we all find ourselves in. This is really a difficult place to live, and there are a tremendous amount of historical issues that continue to be present in our everyday lives, and we're all cognizant of that and aware of that, and really, in order to be able to provide some level of social justice for individuals, is being able to again provide, you know, jobs, provide a quality education, provide a certain level of safety through law enforcement, again protecting of rights, also, you know, being able to identify areas of needs for individuals, housing, you know, those are all things that we need to strive to be better at. And that's something that I'm committed to. Certainly there are folks who would say that there is a certain amount of social justice here and that they're happy with that. And there would be others who say, no, that's not the case. And it's really up to myself as the chairman, as well as, you know, the tribal council to sit down and identify ways in which we can be better at all of the things that we're offering as far as services and leadership. And that's what I'm committed to, and that's what I've always been committed to.
Thank you, Rand. Gary, social justice, community values. What are your thoughts on the quality of social justice in Hoopa? What is the basis observation of your opinion?
Well, the first one is decreasing or eliminating inequality, promoting inclusiveness of diversity, and establishing environments that are supportive of all our people, and not only tribal members, but people in the community. I'll give you an example of that. There's a lot of people that complain and input about downtown problem and the people hanging around there and relieving themselves or defecating next to the properties and stuff in there. If it's not addressed and you don't take care of it, right, you can have the police come over there and drag them off and put them in jail, or you can have them push them out. That's not being inclusive of it. What we need to do is manage the problem. And managing the problem is give them facilities downtown that they can use those facilities so they're not out doing it in public or behind somewhere else. We're not addressing that. We're not management. That should have been built by now. That's something we had the wherewithal. We had enough money to do it, but it never got done. My thing is, let's manage the problem. The people down there in this environment that we're talking about, we all have relatives down there. We're all a part of it, and we have to take ownership in that. And that really is taking a look at the problem and dealing with it. I like to talk about values. Where have we failed and where have we come down? We need to look back when we were younger and we were in this community. You didn't even have to lock your door. You could leave your house and go, and now you got people come over, knock on your door in the middle of the night or want to come in there. It can't be that way. We can't go. We got to get back to people and teach them value of themselves, their net worth. We got to get build on their self-esteem, those kind of things, to make them a productive citizen and try to get them out of there when they fail. So part of that goes back to providing social services and stuff that we can get these people to work with them so they can overcome their drug addiction, they can come over their alcohol, those kind of things. But at the same time, we have to stop it. It's like, I really like my hand, but if it came gangrene, I'd cut it off to save my life. That's where we're at with a lot of family members and stuff coming. Because when you start stealing, and you start stealing from your family, you don't even want them in your own house, and they'll steal everything for you. But the bottom line is, if you're working with the police department, if you arrest, you got to press charges. If you get them arrested and you press charges, and you have to show up to testify. The community has to stand up and take an active role of this and say, we're not going to take it anymore if we're really going to fix it. And we got to hold people accountable or they won't change. And realistically, the only people that are going to change are the people that want to change, and they're going to do it themselves. But you got to give them a taste. If there's no consequences, the behavior continues. And we need to work very diligently, very hard to get it back, to reinforce those values and help our tribal members, help their kids, help their family, help their brother-in-law, sister, whoever it is, to overcome that, to change this environment that we're in. And that's value. Take pride in yourself.
I just follow up. I certainly would, if Councilman Risling wants to follow up on, you know, what I would offer here is that if we're talking about the facility downtown being the restroom, that was a part of the planning session that we had in earlier in my administration. There were a number of proposals that were put on the table. There were a number of schematics. There was a design of a Portland loo that was presented as well. And at a certain point, you know, as far as you know, the chairman goes, we had working meetings. I put forward a budget that identified new construction, which would have went to, and we talked about that, is when the budget was presented and ultimately approved, those funds would be made available, and they were and they are, and it's unfortunate that, you know, we still don't have a budget. That's an issue for maybe another time. But those things I did put on the table. And at a certain point, the tribal council collectively needs to come together and vote for those types of things if it's important to them. And again, if those facilities aren't downtown, you're right. Just because there isn't one downtown doesn't mean that you can go ahead and use the restroom on the side of a building. As well, you know, if you talk about consequences for those types of activities, you know, we've proposed... I've certainly proposed a misdemeanor tribal law and order code, which would go towards addressing some of those crimes that are committed that really go unaddressed by the county. Certainly the federal government isn't going to come in and cite you for trespassing and loitering and what have you. But the idea isn't behind, again, the accountability and some consequence for those types of activities. And you're right, there's a bigger, broader problem associated with why folks are in the position they are, or downtown Rivers. And the epidemic of heroin, for instance, it's not just here. I mean, it is nationwide and worldwide for that matter. But there are people that are close to us that are affected by that, each and every one of us. And so the idea behind, you know, the tribal misdemeanor law and order code and the development of a short-term holding facility or detention center is to be able to take folks out of the environment that they're in, which is you know, in some cases, you know, defecating and loitering and all of that, and provide them with those services, provide them with the opportunity for whether it's a rehabilitation or whatever the case might be, and actually take a real strong interest in them individually for their own safety at a certain point, because the county and other folks, the federal government, they're not here. They're not addressing it. It is up to the tribe to ultimately address these issues, because it's been Public Law 280. Federal reassumption will come along, but they haven't been addressed by the county. The sheriff is not, there's nothing binding the sheriff to come out and address these issues. But anyway, I just wanted to point that out.
Okay. Did you have something you wanted to say on that?
No, I agree.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Very good. Okay. Let's keep moving on then. And Gary, you have the response first on this one. It's spiritual cultural values. What are your thoughts on how we consider our spiritual cultural core values when planning the future so as to improve a quality of life for our youngest age children as they grow up?
My first thoughts on that is maintaining our cultural identity of who we are as a people is of major importance, because that's what we pass on to our children. So with that, our language programs are a priority in supporting and participating in our cultural dances, those two things. Those things help us identify who and what we are as a people, and are pivotal to maintaining our sovereignty. So we need to teach those things. The current program is an ANA grant within the tribe, a three-year grant, and I think it's coming up in this last year. And the instructor over there, Gordon Bussels, did an excellent job there in bringing in speakers and stuff to start teaching our language to children and kids. The one that I'm unsure about, but I know they have one out in McKinleyville, is the program that was teaching Yurok language, and I thought at one time they were even teaching it up here, but we need to get that into the school and strengthen that. So from kindergarten on, there should be an immersion program going on all the time and be offered to our children so we can get that language and strengthen it. And as far as our dances, we could change things in our policies and stuff. I know the Karuk, if you go to a dance and you work for a tribal program, if the manager will let you go, you can take off with pay as you go to the dance all the time. And that helps you participate. We have to take leave or whatever, or we have to take annual leave or something else to go to participate in our dances. But you've got to participate if you want to strengthen that. And to be working not only in language, to be working on teaching people how to make regalia, teaching people how to sing, how to understand that. Because most people, when they go there to the event, a lot of them are sitting in the back and they're watching people. And there's no harm in doing that. But if you teach somebody how to sing a song and how to keep rhythm, keep time, that type of thing, songs will come to you. So it's just a matter about how you approach it. I personally am putting on dances, invite people to come sit down with me, because usually in between the dances or in a day off or something, I'm working on regalia, making regalia. And people that want to come and they want to learn about the dances, how they're done, everything else, I give them an opportunity and I work with them with a piece of regalia. The bottom line is I let them walk with it on the end after the dance is all over. But you get that mentoring, that teaching that goes on. So those are major, major importance. And then tribal government's role is to provide, like porta potties, trash bins, or whatever. It's not really the function to provide anything else. Here in Hoopaw, they do. They provide money so people can feed people and do things. So it varies from tribe to tribe as where you go and what you do. But this, these values that are there that are taught, and that is, you know, if you disagree with the dance or you agree who's going on, you don't go. You stay away. Furthermore, and we've discussed it at the table, is the impact on the culture and the things when people are passing away and dying and stuff, where normally they're not going to have a meeting on a day that they have a funeral, or they're not going to have a meeting when they have a wake anymore. It's kind of progressed, and when somebody dies, it's not until they're buried or put away. But realistically, the problem when it runs against the tribal council, especially if the funeral is held in the government center there, the neighborhood facilities, then you have a lot of people closed down for the day. I mean, we give people about 14 holidays a year, and if you close down tribal government for another 20, 28 funerals, all of government is shut down. So government has to come up with ways to deal with these cultural values and the feelings of people, yet to be able to come up and not have as many days shut down. And that really means building another government center that you can take most of those programs out of there and run government, build them a center, and then run government without having a negative impact of so much time shut down.
Okay, thank you. Ryan, The question is spiritual cultural values. What are your thoughts on how we consider our spiritual cultural core values when planning the future so as to improve a quality of life for our youngest age children as they grow up?
Well, certainly, each individual has their own spiritual traditional core values that guides them. And I think a lot of that's based on the teachings that you've learned over the years. Certainly, myself, I appreciate and understand the culture and the sensitivity around some of the issues that Councilman Risling has raised, and those are important. If you're talking about school age children, again, it's really getting into an ability to teach them the things that you would like them to learn as far as spiritual core values are concerned. And if those are traditional ways, Councilman talks about regalia making and putting on dances and those types of things, and those are important. Some families aren't particularly interested in that and aren't necessarily engaged in those types of activities and have, leaned in a different direction. Doesn't necessarily take away from their spirituality or their core values as far as that's concerned. Obviously, as leaders, we all want to have a strong spiritual cultural conviction in the way in which we operate on a daily basis, and it's really our guide on how to interact with other people and again also be open to a willingness to provide support if necessary, to be a leader if necessary, to sort of impact change when necessary. for me, if we're getting into sort of the government and our role as government leaders, I don't tend to like to mix either the spiritual traditional side of who we are as Hoopa people with the governmental side of things. Obviously, they do mix. I mean, there's just no doubt about that, and we try to manage those things. And certain situations require that the government have a certain level of respect, if you will, for individuals and families. And Councilman's right. We have the one facility that's the community center, and that's what it was always supposed to be. I'm more of the mind of rather than building a new government center, we actually focus on building a new community center. and the government can continue to function and operate in the facility that we have, but alleviate the pressures in you know, having only that building by providing a space and opportunity for folks to be able to grieve or to, you know, have wedding receptions or you know, birthday parties, whatever the case might be. These are the people's buildings. You know, these aren't government buildings. These are buildings that are here as a result of the Hoop Valley Tribe and our membership. And if they need to be made available for specific occasions or events or times of grief, then that's, you know, what we're going to do. And there's a certain, you know, history to taking those types of actions. But as far as, you know, youngsters are concerned, it's really about providing an opportunity for them to learn through the educational program, if you're asking me. And that's where, you know, a child who is engaged in their culture or in their traditional practices, and whether it's making, you know, the drums, the bows and arrows, the regalia, as the councilman talks about, you know, we can provide those types of things within an educational structure. And I think that will go a long ways towards addressing the quality of life and the things that you're talking about. But again, you know you have folks and families who have done things a certain way for a long period of time, and the way that they do that is that's right. You know, that's right to that individual family. I'm not going to step in and say, hey, no, here's the way that it's supposed to be done. Certainly, that's not for me to decide. I have my own opinions on the way things should be for my own personal life, and that's what my guide is. Certainly, as a tribal leader and the head of the government, I'm not going to impose, you know, my specific way of living on anyone else. Certainly, not from a government's perspective. We're there to set policy. We're there to make those decisions on behalf of the people through government function, and that's what we'll do.
Okay, thank you. And we are talking with candidates for the tribal chairmanship in the primary election of the Hoopa Valley Tribe. It's coming on to 7 o'clock p.m. You're listening to KIDE Hoopa, Hoopa Tribal Radio. And the next question we're going to go to, back with Ryan here. Please discuss your impression of these two job titles, law enforcement officer and peace officer.
Yeah, you know, when you sent the letter out, that's one that I've contemplated for a while now, and I guess they serve the same purpose. Obviously, you know, by definition, a law enforcement officer is an individual who has the power and authority to enforce certain laws. Now, if you're breaking those laws, you'll have to, I guess, in a certain place, suffer the consequence of an arrest or citation or a ticket, whatever the case may be. Now, on the other hand, a peace officer, I guess, is one who would be there to keep the peace, which is, in my view, would be providing a certain level of safety and stability within the community. But at a certain point, I think they serve the same function. You know, if an officer is there to keep the peace, and there's an individual who may be breaking the law, it's important for them to make contact or address the situation as a peace officer in order to ensure that everything is safe and things are handled in the most efficient way. So that would be my interpretation of the two. Certainly, law enforcement officer is somebody who's enforcing laws, and a peace officer is somebody who's there to keep the peace. Now, depending on what their specific roles are or the directives that they've been given or the manuals in which they operate by, a peace officer could be required to do different things. A law enforcement officer, again, depending on whether they're working for the tribal police department or Federal Bureau of Investigators or whatever the case might be, may have a different set of standards or requirements. But that would be my interpretation of those two titles.
Thank you, Ryan.